Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly.
When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things that you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff with real hands-on authentication experience.
So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back.
Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other.
With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Hi, I'm back. It's Fat Mascara. I'm Jen.
I'm Jess.
We literally just fought over who was going to do the intro because I was so excited to be back on the mic.
It's a lame thing to fight
about.
I'm
back on the mic.
Welcome back.
I'm so excited
feeling
to see
good,
you.
Looking good. Looking engaged. Looking married.
I have a married
feeling
look.
Married.
Honestly, I'm just really excited to hang out with you again.
Oh, thank you. I have to tell you, I had such a blast at your wedding. I don't want to make our listeners jealous. But it was fantastic.
You're
there was
just
dancing. The food was baller. The costumes.
The costumes.
Your
what did you think
were
about outfits costume?
Were great. Like,
oh my God.
And your dad was amazing. I loved meeting all your family. So
I looked over at one point and I saw you talking to my dad and I was like, God bless her. Good luck.
Your dad was like a big Fat Mascara fan. I love it.
Of course he is. We'll talk about that a little bit today, actually, on the episode. I'm going to talk about my wedding makeup because I have.
Oh, yeah, we got to get to that.
I'll let you know what happened. It all went down. Then we're going to talk about Chad's. I literally, when this story came out in New York Magazine about involuntarily celibate men and the plastic surgery they're getting, I was like, why don't we have an episode this week? Why am I getting married? I want to talk to Jess about this.
So I know this is such a deep dive article. And then what else are we talking about?
Sensory inclusive hair salons, a trend that's growing and really interesting. Who is our guest?
Oh, wow. I mean, this is a real crowd pleaser today. We've got Tiffany Masterson, the founder of Drunk Elephant in the Stude, and she is here to like blow your mind on some ideas that maybe you have about her brand or about beauty. And
or even her.
She was great. So stay tuned. So, Jen, I took a couple of shots from your wedding and I put them on our Fat Mascara with your permission, of course. I put one of myself at first and then people were like, yeah, where's Jen? Where's the bride? So I put some photos of you up on the old Fat Mascara Insta story. But people wanted to know, like, did she do her own makeup? Like, what's she wearing? What's that flick? Who did her hair? I couldn't really answer these things. I was also, like, dancing and having fun.
You were on the dance floor till the very end. Actually, I think I left my wedding before you did. Is that right?
No, I don't think so. I think around the same time, though.
We got pizza delivered, like, around midnight.
Yes.
There was, like, pizza drop. And I stole a pizza pie. Me and Eric, like, snuck off into the night.
Like, pizza rat? You like pizza rat?
I was, like, Subway pizza rat at my own wedding, scurrying off into the night.
That's really funny.
So classy. What a classy image. But actually, by the time this episode comes out, I'll have posted. I got photos back, so I'll put one on the gram of my hair and makeup. People, I took Patrick Ta's advice, my own advice, all your support there, and I did my own makeup. How about
that? Okay, mazel tov.
How did it look?
It looked great. It looked beautiful. And your hair looked beautiful, too. I think that is the thing I'm most fascinated
by.
That's
funny. After people heard about this, a bunch of women said to me, you know what? I feel like I could do my own makeup because who knows your face better than you?
True.
But hair, you have to reach behind your head.
Yeah.
It takes a lot more like arm coordination in a way for a lot of women.
Well, I think for everyone, even like hairstylists, you can't.
It's more of a physical like. Act.
It's the angle. You can't get behind your hair.
Yeah, I think if I had for example, your hair, you did that really cool Priscilla, like half up with a little bit of a tease.
Yeah, someone did that for me, yeah.
Like, that takes skill. I just wanted to look like rock and roll princess with big wavy hair. So it was just like the bigger the better,
yeah. The
messier the better. And so I just went with that. I think it was any other look I was going for or like a Garen coif. Forget about it. Are you kidding me? So for my hair, yeah, I waved it with a curling iron and I threw in a ton of Orbe dry texturizing spray at the roots. And then it gets real, real big. And I rubbed Bumble and Bumble Brilliantine.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good
between
one.
My hands. And I used that to like piece out the ends.
What kind of curling iron do you like to use? Do you use like a barrel?
A 1-inch barrel. I use Hot Tools, which is like the cheapest one there is.
Okay.
And I like, do I wrap it around and leave the end out? But I, you know what? Actually, I have a little of a technique for my twist. I don't just wrap. Some musician, I watched a YouTube video. I wrap once, then I take the curling iron out and put it back in and wrap again. You know what? I'll do it on the gram. It's hard to explain. But so that was my hair.
Wrap once, and then you take it out. Slide
it out. And then at the base of where the curl was, I put it in again and wrap again. And basically what it does, instead of a standard spiral staircase kind of curl, it makes it like a little bit off kilter and it looks much more
natural. Oh, that's interesting. But you definitely need to do a video because I think I know what you mean, but I'm not entirely sure.
And if you look at the picture, like, it doesn't look like pageant waves, even though basically is as easy as doing pageant waves. It takes more time, though.
Well, it looked awesome.
I'll do it for you guys.
So let's get to the makeup.
Let's do the makeup.
Okay, so let's start with you've got a bare face. You've just stepped out of the shower. What's happening?
I actually don't think I just stepped out of the shower. I don't know. But anyway, I put on that new Did I do a primer? I did do a primer. Dior's
not to
new,
prime is a crime.
Dior Backstage Primer. Normally I do sunscreen. I did no sunscreen because I was worried about flashback. Mm-hmm. Did not use concealer at all.
Wow.
Thank you, Fraxel. Thank you, Heidi Waldorf, and all your injectables and Botox. A little bit of Dior Nude Air Serum Foundation, some Milk Makeup Work, their lip and cheek thing.
Okay.
It's like a cream blush in the most beautiful rosy color.
Uh-huh.
Some Bobbi Brown gel eyeliner and caviar.
Okay. Is that the one that you normally use?
No,
because
I never
use
it.
It was really good.
Who was it that one of our guests said, if you really want it to be waterproof, you can't do... Oh, Sir John told me, I saw him recently, that I usually use a felt tip eyeliner.
Oh, yeah, that's not going to last.
And he's like, it's not going to last, so I used a gel eyeliner.
Okay, and did you use the brush that comes with?
Yes, that teeny tiny stubby little brush between the lash line.
Okay.
And then...
But you dragged it out a little bit, right?
Did I? I don't think so.
I thought that was a little dragged.
You know what I did the day before at the courthouse? And it looked a little too drag. Like literally drag queen-y for me. So I kept it chill. And then some shadows. They might have been Kevin Aucoin. And then I finished it off with
kind of shadows? We need specifics here,
I don't
Jen.
Do a lot of shadow. It was just like a beigey peach.
Okay.
I'm going to put it all on the gram. I'll list them all out. And then... my brow is Anastasia.
Mm-hmm.
I forget which pencil, but I'll tell intern Tiff and she'll put it on the blog for you guys. And I had my lashes were that lash lift.
Oh,
so
yes,
I didn't
yes,
even
yes.
have mascara. I didn't curl them or anything.
You wearing mascara today or no?
You know what? I've noticed actually the tint from the lash lift fades before the curl does.
Okay,
so I've gone back to maybe 2 weeks, 3 weeks later, I had to start putting mascara on only to tint the ends so they were black as well.
Got it.
But the curl is still there. And honestly, that was the greatest thing I did because I didn't even have to worry about my
lashes.
I love
that you went to an appointment to tint the ends of your lashes.
No, I got them tinted when I got them curled, when I did the lashes.
No, it's just funny. Like, touch up the ends of my
lashes.
Well,
I didn't get an appointment again. I just have been using mascara to do it.
Okay.
But if I, like...
If you had nothing to do.
And I finished it with Troye Sivan's powder, and I can't find it, but it's like a peach, a beige, and a white.
Okay.
And it was just like it's a finishing powder that you could sort of do a little bit of contour with, but not
really. Mm-hmm.
And the lips were my usual everyday lips.
Yeah, I mean, you looked like yourself. You know when sometimes you go to a wedding and you're like, oh my God, who's that lady? And it's the bride. Like, it's, you know, you really looked like yourself.
Maybe it was Daniel Martin that told me this or whatever, but like I took my time layering stuff on and let it sit before I would put the next thing on. And I really, just application wise, I was using a beauty blender left and right to make sure everything was like settled in, right?
Yeah.
And just spending that little bit of extra time, I think, like elevated the game a little.
So how long do you think the whole thing took you?
A half an hour for my makeup and half an hour for my hair.
Not bad.
Yeah. Because then I wanted to party.
Well done, Jen.
Yeah.
Well, I would say I'm inspired, but I you know, I'm already done with that. But I feel like I can do my makeup for a big, big event soon.
I'm also really excited, guys. I did not read anything in the sign-in book because I've been so busy. But apparently Jeff Janeski, Jessica's husband, like several people have like, Jeff was hogging the sign-in book for like a long amount of time. So I'm so excited to see what he wrote
me. He's a thoughtful man.
Well, that's why you married him. So now we're both married ladies.
Yeah.
But don't worry, the podcast isn't changing. We're still going to be awesome. Not that married people aren't awesome.
One word. Whoa.
I thought it was going to be Chad.
No, one word. Okay, chat. We're talking about Chads right now. So New York Magazine, their cover story last week says, this is a Chad. And it's this very, like, guys, take a minute. Just go on the Google machine. If you haven't seen this cover, just Google New York Mag Chad cover story.
He's a masculine jawline, but a feminine lip, really.
Feminine lip and like beautiful
eyes. He's like
a
Zac Efron, sort of. It's that perfect combo of like masculine, feminine.
Exactly. And we're seeing a lot more of that lately, which the Chad article gets into. But I'm going to distill this, you know, tremendous cover story for you. Basically, you know the incels? You guys know what incels are?
Involuntarily celibate men.
Yeah. Yeah. Most of them, I think, are men. But yeah, it infers a man. They really want to get down with someone, but it's just not working out for them. And they've kind of formed a community and embraced this identity of an incel. And what a lot of them think is holding them back is their physical appearance. So what they want to look like is what they dub on the internet Chads. Because like there's a lot of Reddit groups and communities. And I do think it's nice that there's a community for people who are not feeling their best, but to say the least. But they call guys who have this look and who seem to kind of be thriving in life a Chad. And then they're like good looking.
Yes.
You know, presumably kind of
like a very heteronormative of back in the day, male model bro-y face.
Kind of like fuller lips. Yeah.
And they think that their looks are the reason they're not getting laid. I'm going to tell you, I think it might be their misogynistic attitudes.
There are.
And their body dysmorphia.
There is a lot of that going on.
But I understand it's people that have taken to a really weird place, this feeling of I'm not wanted and I'm not loved. And they think that plastic surgery might help with that.
Yes. So the surgeon that is kind of like the Don.
Girl, do not get me started on the surgeon, Dr. Barry Epley.
Mm-hmm. He's in Indiana, which we all know is a hotbed of cosmetic innovation.
He caters to this community quite a bit, and that's what the story is about. But what I found most interesting and also rang very untrue for me is that he said he wasn't truly aware that he was popular in many of the online forums where they talk about who's going to do my surgery, who's going to put my jaw implants in are very big, lip filler, and a lot of body physiology changing.
Like shoulders.
Breaking your clavicle bone to make your shoulders broader, calf implants, things to sort of make you look more stereotypically masculine, but that take it to a very extra level. And he says that he doesn't cater to these people. I bet you there's some person in his office in the back room doing SEO for incels because how does he not realize that people are flying from Russia to him because he's known on the interwebs for this?
I think there's something. I read this article and, you know, a friend of mine told me, he's like, oh, did you see it? And I, you know, was thinking, I kind of thought I knew what it would be about and it went someplace totally different. It made me really, really sad. It made me like truly in my heart sad. I thought about people who guys who feel like this who, you know, end up doing terrible things. Did you remember like that, not the to be super dark? Yeah, the guy killing. that killed mm-hmm. people in California. Mm-hmm. He was an incel and he felt that, you know, girls didn't look at him and they were looking at other guys and, you know, now it's payback time. I think that's kind of the darkest place. But then I'll tell you, I went on an incel Reddit forum because I was so...
Oh, I'd be scared too.
No, I mean, I don't...
You feel so uncomfortable.
I have to tell you, like, this Sad. Is... It was so upsetting. There's this huge, like, it's the kind of thing you could scroll forever. Like, mm-hmm. it wasn't like, oh, I got mm-hmm. to the bottom. And there'd be a picture of a guy who, let's just say, did not look like Zac Efron. And, you know, he'd say, like, 5'2", 200 pounds, like severe acne. And then he'd say, is it over? Question mark. And then there'd be a whole thread of, it really is a community, some supportive, some certainly less so. There's a thing that they say, like, never even began, like super mean. Yeah. And then other stuff is like, no, bro, just like hit the gym, lose 100 pounds, go on Accutane and like get a new wardrobe and like, you know, you'll be crushing it, whatever, like mm-hmm. that. So it's kind of half positive for guys who don't feel like they're where they need to be in life, and half really, to your point, like there's some misogynistic tones. It's, I don't want to paint them all with this, like, they're all like that sicko in California, mm-hmm. but to see the kind of negativity and hurt that these, I'm saying guys, people, but in this case, guys, feel is so troubling to me.
It is troubling. And I think the internet really emphasizes this because you see it with political views and things like mm-hmm. that, where you're really not that far out of the norm, out of like the S curve of what is the average. Like, yes, maybe I'm right wing or left wing, but mm-hmm. I'm not like alt. And then you go online and you dig deeper and deeper and you find your views changing and your scope of how you think of things broadening, and all of a sudden you're in the weird place. So maybe this starts out as a guy who has low self-esteem
yeah.
and just needs some support from fellow men. Or honestly, I looked at some of the pictures. I'm like, these guys are good-looking, fine guys. Not even good-looking.
Oh,
they're
yeah.
like,
I saw
sweet guys. Like,
yeah. I saw like a huge spectrum of right. people who you're like, I understand why this person's upset. And then some are like, dude, just fucking shave that little weird mustache and you're all good.
But the problematic thing is when there's a slippery slope that takes it to, if you, maybe you combine in some mental health issues, a weird, dark, dark place.
Yeah.
And those are the people that I think this surgeon needs to also bring in a psychiatrist to work
yeah.
in his practice. I cannot imagine. And we talked with who's the plastic surgeon we just had on?
Oh, Dr. Giacona.
About turning down people with body dysmorphia, turning down people who he knows will never be happy with the results mm-hmm. and suggesting maybe they need some mental health counseling instead. Because, yes, surgery can do a lot. It can make you feel better about yourself. But, like, some of these people need mental health.
Yeah.
Counseling.
Yeah. It is. I think this is a mental health issue.
It
You're
just
absolutely
made
right.
made me realize I want to stay off the internet.
Yeah. This just made me realize, like, we have to have like severe, extreme empathy. Like, I
yes.
mean, I think we're
yes.
both empathetic people, but it opened like another chamber, and just seeing these guys and this is it over thing. And they're like, but some of them are 12
so
years
sad.
Old. Some of them are like 40 something.
Okay. My last thought on this is yeah. to get back to a not quite a sad place.
Yeah.
Is this man attractive to you, Chad?
Oh, that's actually a great question. No, he looks like, a teen star pretty boy.
Yeah, he was a little too pretty for
but
me.
But that's the aesthetic that, in broadly speaking, they want. They want this kind of new masculine/feminine
yeah, it's
Efron
like,
thing.
It's like you could please everyone, but in my head, you please everyone, you please no one, because I like a very distinctive look, and he's just so, you know,
blah.
He's like ambiguous in all matters, this Chad. This whole thing fascinates me. I could talk about it for hours. I bet our listeners could too.
Oh, sure.
So DM us. Tell us what you think. Maybe we'll do a post on it and get your views.
We're going to put Chad up there.
Put Chad's picture on our Instagram.
Okay.
Yeah.
Stay tuned. Okay, Jed, I heard about these new things called like sensory salons?
Sensory inclusive.
What does
it's
that
mean? It's actually
mean?
Not that new. It's been building momentum over the last 2 years. And basically, it's a salon where
It started out in the autism community because for a lot of autistic kids, getting their hair cut is super traumatic.
Yeah, yeah, I've heard that.
To someone who isn't autistic, you're like, why? But all the cutting noise of the scissors, the hair falling on the skin can feel like paper cuts. There's loud, sometimes there's music.
The blow dryers talking, alone.
Blow dryers.
Screaming over the blow dryer trying to make conversation.
Getting a shower, all that water on your scalp, like...
Actually, you know, thinking about it, you're really put through the
ringer. I'm making myself feel anxious
about
it.
No, who wants to do all this stuff?
So it's not just autism, though, too. People with anxiety disorders, people with epilepsy, there's lights. There's, like, bright lights. There's all sorts of stuff going on. It's a sensory
overload.
The salon is,
like, chaos. Like, now that I'm thinking about it, I'm never going back.
Like, it's like a spa. We're talking about your average hair salon. So I think it started out in the kids' salon community where they're making sensory-inclusive salons so that kids with autism can have a better experience at the hair salon. But it's sort of moved into the adult world, too, because just a lot of people get overwhelmed. Our world is so loud and noisy, and we're looking at flashing lights and computer screens all the time. It's nice to sort of turn off. So there's actually New York just got its first one. I think it's called Barber's Blueprint. But I looked into this, and there's an app. I think it's called Culture City. Oh, my God. Yes, Culture City with a K, and we'll put a link to it. And it's a community where you can find other salons that are sensory inclusive. And so that means they're going to do things like put an eye mask on you when they're washing your hair at the sink, or there won't be blow dryers, or if they are, they're in a separate room away from the people that they bother. And just having like a sort of empathy towards these people, because I've seen like kids with autism and people who don't know how to deal with them just be like, sit still. That doesn't work.
Yeah,
so it's just this,
really cruel.
This way of knowing how to deal with people who might have, you know, these kind of issues at the hair salon.
I wonder if we're going to see more like services that are tailored to sensory inclusivity.
Actually, on that app, Culture City, they also talk – it's not just for hair salons. It's for other things where that are safe spaces. I believe it started out for autism, but like I said, it could be for people who just have sensory disorders or flashing lights.
And we
epilepsy.
All know at least like four people in our lives that have this kind
and
of situation.
And honestly, even people who don't have those particular medical conditions – sorry, Molly, our producer, is mad at me because I just looked down and I sounded soft on the mic. Didn't I, Molly? Anyway, even people that don't have those medical conditions, sometimes it's nice to turn off.
Yeah.
You know?
This is really important. Thank you for sharing all this news.
Actually, this topic was your idea, so thank you.
We are here with Tiffany Masterson by popular demand. She is the founder of Drunk Elephant, a brand that officially launched just 5 years ago, but quickly became one of the most popular prestige skincare brands on the market. Wow. And on social media. So Tiffany is based in Houston.
Right? Is that right?
That's right.
Okay, good.
She's a mom of four, and she's here in New York, especially for this pop-up. And we'll talk about that in a second. And she found time to squeeze in a little sesh at the Fat Mascara Studio. Welcome, Tiffany.
Welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
You also have a reputation as, like, the nicest person in beauty. All the research I was doing on you beforehand was like, she's so great. She exudes warm vibes.
That's really sweet. Thank
you. I'm getting all the warm vibes.
Thank you.
Well, I know you've had a crazy busy week, so I have to thank you for coming in. We're going to talk about why you're so busy. But first, let's back up a bit. How did you become the skincare guru?
Oh, I wouldn't call myself a guru.
She's humble, too.
I wouldn't describe myself as a guru, but I'm curious.
An authority, a figure,
I'm curious. Mm-hmm. I'm like a private investigator by heart. I want to figure things out. You know, like I love riddles. I'm a consumer. Mm-hmm. And I got interested in ingredients and skincare. I was selling this little bar cleanser on the side. When my kids were babies, and
from Malaysia, right?
It was from Malaysia, and it was just this. It was kind of this bar, and it had these weird directions. Anyway, I at the end of the day, it was like the bar was fine. It was very basic, but I wanted to be like accessible. I wanted to help people was the main thing.
Wait, why did you? I don't understand this bar thing. You grabbed a bar from like another brand and
it was a bar that was being imported from Malaysia by my brother-in-law and my brother and his wife, and they just wanted to sell it in the United States. They just wanted to
like a cleansing.
They wanted to import it and sell it, and so I started helping selling it, and I think it just awakened something in me, a passion about ingredients and learning. And I like to once I get interested in something, I kind of go crazy and I try to read all about it. And I was selling the bar and people would call me and say, gosh, I'm breaking out, or I'm not breaking out. It's helping. It's not. I'm using this. What do you think? And it just kind of, I had skin issues myself. And I was sort of a brand hopper going around from, I tried everything out there. And I just I felt like one thing would make something, a product would make one thing better and then something else would get worse. So I couldn't really find anything that worked. But through my study of ingredients and my interest, and I started reading more and more, and that led to kind of reading ingredient decks and trying to decipher what the ingredients were there for. What could it be that was causing a breakout in someone or me, myself, because I was trying different products also at the time. And it just was over a 2-year period. And I really just was reading and curious and taught myself about ingredients. I started eliminating things from my skincare routine. I eliminated essential oils. I remember eliminating chemical screens. Silicones came way later. Drying alcohols, I think I eliminated not on purpose, but just toners and things like that that made my skin feel tight and dry. Clay masks I eliminated. There's just various things I eliminated trying to find like what worked for me.
What was your skin issue? What were your key skin issues?
I had mild rosacea. I had large pores. I remember always trying to figure out how to deal with that. It's oily T-zone, acne prone. Kind of just sensitive, sort of irritable skin. And it would turn red and, you know, just not great. Like, I was not fully happy with it. But when I started eliminating things and trying to, you know, I was, like I said, selling this bar. So the directions on the bar were, don't use anything else, just this bar. It's kind of weird direction. So that kind of forced me into like not using anything. And I was using like a pure oil with the bar. But I didn't know why my skin was acting so well. Anyway, so it was through these studies and researching and just...
It's almost like a food elimination diet, but for skin.
Well, that's what I call it today. Yeah. It's like the whole 30 for your face.
Right.
But the bar wasn't marketed that way. It was just through my curiosity of ingredients that I kind of, over the period of 2 years, sort of started helping people I was selling the bar to kind of say, try eliminating this, don't use this.
Does this bar exist anymore?
Yeah, it does. And it's just a basic bar that they sell. You know, it's a very basic formula, actually, that it was a bar that was marketed under different names. It was a multi-level marketing thing.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So it was just a very basic bar.
What'd you guys call it in Texas? So what was your name for it?
It was called the Wonder Bar.
She's good at naming stuff.
I didn't name it. I didn't name it.
Oh, you didn't?
No, it wasn't. We didn't own it. Okay. It came from, it was a bar base that's a very common bar base, actually, that was named and repackaged through different distributors around the world. And they, of course, didn't tell us that. We didn't know that. So that's something we found out later. But it was just a fun thing for me. And it was a vehicle for me to learn and teach myself about ingredients. And I'm grateful it came into my life, because I don't think I ever would have realized the passion for marketing and ingredients that I've ended up having.
Which parlayed into Drunk Elephant. So let's talk about that. First, I realized this because I would ask people about the brand and they'd always be like, they just call it Drunk Elephant and not even think about what that means. It's just like, it sounds fun. Can you tell, for people who don't know, why is it called Drunk Elephant?
So when I decided to do my own line, I was, you know, I had an idea of which kind of products I wanted in the line, what I wanted to launch, with several products to give a whole routine. And when I was in California one time, I was just in an apothecary kind of looking at ingredients and stuff or products. And I found a marula oil. And it actually had essential oils in it. But I could tell I had wanted to use apricot oil in the line because it was bioavailable. It was easily, you know, absorbed into the skin. It was, at the time I was calling it skin identical, but I wanted an oil like that. I found the marula and I tried it on my hand. I loved it immediately. I went home and Googled it and figured out found this video of elephants and other animals in Africa eating marula fruit off the ground and acting tipsy, stumbling around. And I was so serious about studying ingredients and learning and creating these formulations that it was kind of like, wow, can I call it Drunk Elephant?
Because so it like starts to ferment on the ground, and it's like alcoholic, basically, for the elephants, right?
Right, and it's a myth, you know, it's not really true, but can I call it that? I kind of polled my friends and family, and, you know, half of them said, no way, but it's really cute. And the other half said, absolutely, and it's really cute. And so I just thought, so there wasn't really a negative response to it, except for my mom and my grandmother didn't like it. But I just thought, you know, it's me, and so I might as well go with it's reflective of my personality. Kind of, I make fun of myself.
It's like lighthearted.
But I'm serious, and I work hard, and it's kind of representative of my personality.
So Drunk Elephant, if you're a listener of this podcast, I'm sure you've heard of the brand before. And that's just kind of a testament to how big your brand became. How did it blow up so quickly?
I think word of mouth really was the main driver in our growth.
Do you mean word of mouth, like me telling Jen after work? When do you mean like social media? What or both?
Social media for sure had a part in it. Sephora had a huge part in it. I mean, but I think that, I mean, you know, just because when I launched the brand, when I had the philosophy, when I got the idea, like, wow, it was one day where it kind of hit me like, oh my gosh, eliminating these ingredients, like these specific ingredients from the routine, from the products, that's, you know, could maybe change people's skin and experience with skincare and the whole thing. I think it's at the root cause of many issues that we deal with. Mm-hmm. And I really was so convicted in my philosophy. Mm-hmm. All I wanted to do was sit down with my girlfriends and tell them about this philosophy.
Like, you call them the suspicious six,
I
right?
do. I do.
You
because,
mentioned maybe four of them. What are they all that you eliminate?
So
and don't
drying
use?
Alcohol, SLS, fragrance and dyes is just one category. Essential oils, chemical screens, and silicones.
When you say chemical screens, you mean a sunscreen?
Or? Sunscreen, which, so my intent is not to say these are terrible ingredients, and it's not to vilify them at all. It is really like from a consumer, like or just like your friend saying, you know what, I eliminated these six ingredients, and why don't you try it if you're dealing with something, like if you're breaking out or if you've got, you know, eczema or whatever. Try eliminating these things. Not to say it cures it, but I have a hunch that it could help. Like, maybe just try it. Like, it's this troubleshooter more than anything. And I think it's been portrayed as this, I vilify these ingredients and because they're toxic. It has nothing to do with being toxic at all. Or it doesn't even have anything to do with being clean. It has to do with, I suspect that, and actually there are studies that say and show that some of these things that I believe are true, but that's not how I came to believe that it's true. It was like by elimination of using these ingredients and using products that contain them. And there are other ingredients I think are out there I wouldn't use, but these ones seemed to be the main ones
for the most number of people,
kind
too.
Of in everything. And there, you know, and I made the brand because I couldn't really find a brand that didn't contain them.
At least one of them, right?
At least one of them.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that you said like you don't vilify those six ingredients and that, you know, you just mentioned the word clean, but like you're not claiming to be like super clean in the way that, I mean, we just debated this a couple weeks ago on the podcast, but like, what does clean actually mean? I can't sit on the mic and actually tell you and feel good. I'm not quite sure.
Right.
I don't think
either.
Anyone can, right?
Well, because there's so many definitions out there now of clean. I mean, we're
and just
clean.
Perceptions too.
If you're talking about ingredients that are linked to like internal disruption or disease, if that's the definition of clean, which it seems to be, then we're clean. But we're also one step further than that. In my mind, clean's not quite enough when you're taking care of your skin. And I say that often because what I'm talking about with the suspicious six is biocompatible or compatible with the health of your skin or the function of your skin. And so that is so important. And so I would call it, we only use biocompatible ingredients that the skin can recognize, absorb, use, benefit from. And so I would say biocompatible is a more important word with Drunk Elephant.
Are biocompatible ingredients natural?
No.
Yeah, you're cool with synthetics if they're good for the skin, right?
Totally. But yeah, no, we use ingredients.
It's a unique philosophy, I think, right now.
Well, I do wonder if, and I mean this with like absolutely no disrespect, but the way this is the good part, the way you have position this is so brilliant and it's so easy to understand. But there are a lot of other brands that, you know, they throw in some clean things and then they throw in some synthetics, but they haven't articulated their story the way you have. And that, I think, is so brilliant.
Well, it's because it's based on a personal experience that I actually had. And so it's a hopeful message. Mm-hmm. It's an honest sort of, it came from a very authentic place. I hate to use that word because everyone's using it, but it just really came from a personal experience that I had. Yeah. I think my personality is to want to help people. And so it's like this, hey, if you're having issues, try what I tried because I'm so excited that it worked. I want it to work for everyone else too. And so it's not about other brands. It's just about ingredients and being like, hey, you know, maybe this could work for you. And so
And you've adopted like a philosophy of transparency too, it seems. Like you're letting us all in on how this all came about. Is that still true to this day?
I think I'm just that. I mean, I think I'm a pretty open person. And for me, you know, people want to shut me up all the time because I probably
say too
much. Who
wants to shut you up?
You know, my team probably wants to shut me up half the time because I tell everything. But no, truthfully, like I am a consumer. I wanted to have a brand that for a consumer. Like I made this brand based on what I would want as a consumer.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what I was like hinting at before. I think your personal story is what really sets your brand apart a lot. And do you feel, was that very intentional for you to really be a part of the brand? Like is the brand Tiffany or are you kind of apart from that?
Nope, the brand is probably Tiffany because every decision that I make is about me and it's not an egotistical thing at all. It's look, I'm just going to stick with one gut and I know that there are a lot of people out there that will benefit from or feel like me or have the same desires and needs and wants as me in a skincare line. So my thing was, I'm not going to please everybody at all, but I'm going to please the people that want the same thing that I do. And I think that I can direct the brand and develop the brand best when I'm just working from one place.
Yeah.
Instead of trying to please everybody, let's just go with my gut and that's, you know.
And so, do you keep in touch with folks online? Like, you know, you said you're very much about the customer. So, you know, you're here for a week. You did a pop-up. You're meeting with people all the time. You know, are on Instagram. Like, where are you getting most of your information?
You mean like
your consumer feedback?
Oh, all on Instagram, on email.
Do you reply
by
yourself?
I reply to a lot by myself.
Wow. I never know if it's the PR or...
It's never the PR. Never, never.
You said that. You said, well, it's Tiffany, it's me. But there's downsides to that in the
I have help. I have people on there helping me. And there's huge downsides to it because... You know, on the one hand, people say they want to be, they want to have access to the founder and the brand,
right.
And they want you to answer the questions, like be accountable and be right there, accessible. And on the other hand, if you are, you do get attacked, and you do have people come on and really just abuse you.
Yeah, and you've had issues too. You have other people who work on your social accounts. You can't always keep control over what's going
on. No, I've had a bad experience with that, but. You know, the truth is that these things happen.
Yeah. And the bigger you get, I'm sure.
They happen. And you know what? All you got to do is you just need to go on past it and get and do your thing. Do what's right. I mean, we're going to make mistakes and I'm the founder of the brand, so it falls on me.
Yeah.
When something like that happens. So, I'm accountable. It's my fault, you know, but what are you going to do?
So give us some advice, because as we grow on social media No, I want to take this advice. No. What do you do with like the Redditors who like go into threads and they find the person's name that matches the other name and they're like, they're bashing other brands? Or what do you do when another brand comes at you? Or even just a user who's unhappy? Do you block comments?
Or
do you
just
engage
like a straight
them?
Hater? You know?
Like, what's your fault?
Well, I mean, I've had all of that.
I know, and that's what I'm asking.
Every
you.
Bit of it.
Yeah.
It's kind of sad, you know, because I'm sensitive and I'm human. And,
yeah. How do you?
And I do want just to do the best thing for the consumer, and I'm trying to, you know, but you make mistakes. But what do you do? I've done probably everything that you could do. Like, I've done
engaging
stupid things.
Versus
I've
not,
done.
But like, do you decide to be like, you know what? I can't please everyone, and I don't engage. Or do you try and convince people when you know you're right?
Well,
you know
I think I've gone through phases where, like, there was, I think early on I would try to acknowledge it and explain it as best I could in an honest way, but that doesn't work, because what happens is what you find out is a lot of the people who are making the noise aren't sincere, and they don't really want an answer. They don't want an answer, and their motivation is not sincere. And so,
what is their motivation?
So let's say somebody comes on the Instagram feed and says, "Hey, I've tried, you know, your brand and using only your brand, and you know, I'm breaking out like crazy. What am I supposed to do?" And it's a very like, and I answer them honestly. They're coming onto my Instagram feed. I'm giving them my feedback honestly. This is what I think will work, kind of thing. And then they come back and they kind of attack you. And you it comes to light pretty quickly if the person, you know, because you either want to get help, you want to get the money's worth out of the product, you want an answer, or you're there to there to try to make. And I heard this from Leandra Medine recently. She said it, and she said it in a perfect way. They're there to make you smaller, make you look bad, or they're there to genuinely and sincerely get help, and they're there for the right reasons. Typically, these people that come on, you'll find that are trolls and that that are there just to spread hate and be you know, mean-spirited, they don't follow you. And it's interesting because I have a very loving, so kind community. I have a wonderful community. They stick up for each other. They help answer questions. They're there. I don't mean for them to like attack anybody. They're not like that. They try to explain. They answer questions because they use the product and they're there. But these people typically aren't followers. About the Redditors and about the other Instagram pages that are the reason for being is to, quote, you know, expose, or you know, they're the watchdog, whatever. I think they're bullies. I think that's a bully culture in a way. I think it's unfortunate. But you know, again, what are you going to do about it? And all I really care about are the people that are interested in trying and understanding Drunk Elephant, and the people that I'm actually helping and can continue to help. I can't worry about the other people who aren't really, they don't really like the brand anyway.
Are you getting better at depersonalizing it?
Way better. And I was
awful. What was the first time that you got something bad? Do you remember? Or like a moment?
That something bad happened?
Yeah, you don't need to tell us what it is if it's too
egregious.
Well, I
think the first time that something really bad happened that I was so shocked was when there was a comment from my brand on another brand's
feed. Yes, I remember.
It was awful and I was devastated, and it was just terrible. But with everything like that happens, you learn. You learn. Unfortunately, you learn to be more guarded. You learn not to trust as much. You learn to that things, you know, you can't always, things aren't going to always be the way you want them to be. So you have to fix them and move on and just make sure
I'm gonna call Tiffany a couple times in my life in the future. I feel like, Tiffany, say that again to me.
Yeah, how do you dust yourself off from like a social media?
You have to. And
crisis.
I'm a firm believer that things happen for a reason, even if it's a bad thing, good thing.
May come of it.
Everything happens for a reason.
Okay, shifting gears a little bit. We, you know, Jen and I are out in the market all the time. We see a million brands. We're seeing a lot of brands that seem to be inspired by Drunk Elephant.
Packaging-wise.
Mm-hmm. Usually packaging-wise, actually.
The packaging, we're seeing a lot of color, a lot of neon. And I think even maybe a little bit of the attitude, like the
cheekiness.
Yeah, cheeky, but like clean-ish, .. What do you think? Have you seen them?
I've seen them. People send them to me all day long, every day. My community sends them to me.
Oh, okay, your community.
I think that it's, well, for me, like, that's the last thing I do is look around. I really try to pull inspiration from totally different industries. I live in Houston. I mean, I'm kind of there, and I'm not really looking, like, to copy other brands. But I think it's unusual when you have a brand and you've got the opportunity to launch a brand that you would take ideas from another brand, because to me it seems so obvious that it takes away right off the bat. It's like you're not being who you are, and it's like trying to copy someone's outfit. I try to do it, you know, a gazillion times in high school. There's this girl that always had the perfect outfit. Her name's Lisa.
What was the outfit
and,
like?
She's the coolest chick ever, and she just always had the perfect jewelry, the perfect shoes, the perfect everything. And I would go home and I would tell my mom, and I you know what? I never looked like Lisa. And I just feel like as a brand,
you're Lisa now. Drunk Elephant is the Lisa of skincare. Well,
it's just, it doesn't work, I don't think. But it's flattering.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what else is flattering? All this buzz about like what your company's worth and when are you going to sell it. We meet a lot of founders who truly say to us honestly, oh yeah, I just started this company so I can sell it. And I get the feeling that's probably not why you started Drunk Elephant.
No, and I don't like, that's not also the thing, like, I just want to sell it. You know, that makes me, like,
so why
sad.
Why haven't you, and what would it take to be like, okay, this is worth me selling to a larger company?
Well, just, well, because there are things that you want to do, you want to accomplish, and you want to make happen. Mm-hmm. And it's not always as easy when you're not with a strategic that has done all that before. Some things, not everything. We do a lot of things our way. I would not sell to anybody ever if I couldn't continue to be myself. I couldn't, you know, continue to have my team that I love. I've had two people quit my company in 5 years and one came back.
And how many people work for you now?
100.
Wow.
What's so great about working at Drunk Elephant? Like, tell me, like, what are you guys doing?
I just think it's a really fun culture, and I think it's a very flat culture environment. It's
like hierarchy wise, you mean?
Well, or, I mean, it's not really, but I mean, but I think we have a fun group of people. I hire people with shared values. I try.
Yeah.
And we have a very strict sort of like, look, let's not talk about other brands.
Mm.
Let's not order products from other brands to, you know, copy packaging or whatever. You know what I'm saying? Like, let's not, because I think, let's just have a kind culture. Let's have each other's backs. This is not a competitive thing.
That's a very, like, a great average, or only two people in the past 5 years.
Well, it is a happy culture. Honestly, it's not a competitive thing. So, like, in the sales arena, the sales department, Drunk Elephant, the field team, it's not a she did sold more than you sold. It's not any of that. It's everyone's pretty happy for each other. We have the same purpose, is to help people. We don't go out and try to bash or trash. It's not.
So you would never want to be part of a larger corporation if you had to abandon those values. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly right. And I think, I'm sure there are people out there that have the same values. I mean, it's, you know, it's just a matter of finding the right partner.
We can't buy you for the right number, like $1 billion, and then see where Tiffany stands. You're doing okay.
You? That would be fun.
What's up, mascara is not in the market to buy a brand right now.
I'm curious, as a manager, somebody who's kept people, like, so happy, and it's reviews time at Harper's Bazaar, so I've got a lot of questions right now.
We have reviews at Mary Claire right now, too.
What are some questions that you ask people to, or like, to kind of suss out if they have the right values?
Ooh.
Like, how can you tell?
I think you can tell on the phone. Like,
on the phone?
Having a 30-minute conversation with someone, I think you can tell. Like, I don't like cocky. Mm-hmm. I don't like anything like that. You can tell braggy, kind of cocky, competitive. Mm-hmm. Like, I know, like, I've interviewed people who are like, they've interviewed with brands that are like, we're number one. If you're relentless and you're cutthroat and you're, you know, just that attitude, that's a sales, like a kind of, I don't know, just, that's just not our attitude. It's not like, go sell the product. It's like, share the philosophy with people, and if they don't buy something, that's fine. Like, just share the philosophy, get the
information,
get the philosophy in the people's head, and then if they want to try it, let's let them try
it. What percentage of your company is male versus female, I'm wondering?
I don't even know. That's a great
question.
Would
you say there are more women?
Much more women. Many really? More women, yeah. Many more women. Yeah, we have all, yeah, it's got a great, great group of people.
So you were in town for a number of things, but the big event was the pop-up. So can you tell us a little bit about this?
Yes. So we had a pop-up in the UK when we launched there, mm-hmm. and we had a pop-up in Singapore when we launched there. And it was very well received, really, really fun. It was just a chance for my creative team to kind of bring the brand to life. Mm-hmm. And it really feels like you're stepping into, like, you know, it's crazy. It's
the drunk world.
It's tactile, and there's lots of incredible digital stuff going on. And it's also educational, which we always try to do, and with the goal of spreading the philosophy again. You know, so people can kind of grasp that, but in a fun way.
Oh, my God, your magnifying glasses. That was the hottest ticket at the beauty closet, Mary Claire. Like, everybody wanted that. Speaking of education, that's what made me think of it.
Yeah.
So they were, for people who don't know, they were little magnifying glasses so you could look at the ingredient list of other brands.
Yeah, exactly. Of all brands, you know.
Just, genius.
I thought it would be a cute thing on the shelfie. But lots of neon acrylic, lots of it's really just a fun place to be.
Why did you make neon acrylic like part of your brand DNA?
I just love it.
It's very decisive.
Yeah, I just love it. We were talking, my designer and I were talking early on when we were trying to do our first end cap at, actually, no, it came way before that. We made these clear acrylic neon boxes in 2013 before we were in Sephora, before we had a publicist, anything. Mm-hmm. And we sent them out to 30. I, again, like private investigator, I figured out the top 30 beauty directors and figured out their mm-hmm. email addresses mm-hmm. and, you know, got their addresses and sent these boxes to 30 people. And they were well received. Like, I actually got emails back and there were people. I was so excited. It was such a fun time. But we used clear neon acrylic boxes then. I think mm-hmm. it's just something I'm attracted to, bright pops of color, clean. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, and pop-ups. So I know we're telling everyone about these fabulous pop-ups. You had one in New York. Are you going to be doing more pop-ups throughout the city? Throughout the country, rather?
I think I will. I don't think it's a huge, like, thing for us. It's kind of when it makes sense. We'll probably do one in Los Angeles at some point.
Brands are doing
pop-ups
like crazy.
I've got some stuff going on there. So that, you know, so we'll probably do that in the fall or maybe even next spring. But it's the consumer loves it. It's actually our way of saying thank you and, you know, for your support and come get to know us a little bit better. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's sort of, it's both. It's we have great fans, so.
Tiffany, let's get personal. Are you ready? She got all nervous on the way in because I asked her for some extrovertness. It's not that
I'm
personal.
I'm just kidding.
I asked you if you were an extrovert or introvert.
I'm an introvert.
But yeah. That's not how personal. I want to know. I read somewhere that you don't wear makeup or you don't really like to wear makeup. Is this true?
I don't like to wear makeup.
Do you mean face makeup or?
No, I don't wear any face makeup. I wear eye makeup.
Okay. But like you would never put a foundation on?
Never.
Why?
I just don't like it. I just don't like the way my skin feels. I don't like the way I look. I just never wore it. I wasn't really, my mom didn't wear it. I just didn't wear it.
You don't have concealer on right now? Girl, your skin looks good. I'm drunk. Okay, so but you wear eye makeup, right? You wear eye makeup?
I wear eye makeup,
okay,
yes.
So tell us, what are some of your favorite eye makeups, like mascara, liner?
I have Too Faced mascara.
Oh, okay. Better than Sex?
I do, yeah.
It's a classic.
Yeah, your lashes are good.
I do. And I actually have an old, like, eyeshadow kit that my mom, like, didn't want anymore. That's the truth. And I've had it for, like, 2 years. And I just do that. I'm not.
You don't remember the brand?
A great. It's black with a white writing on top. I don't know the brand.
It's Chanel. No, I'm just kidding.
It may be. It may be Chanel. Eyebrow stuff, I use Anastasia.
You've gotten to meet a lot of other founders. I always see you at industry events and you get to know these people. Do you ever pick up some of their products, like Anastasia?
So the founders all send each other stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
So
oh, that's cool.
Anastasia, I really, really like. She, I met her when I was first launching at Sephora, just in her chair. She was doing my eyebrows. I was there in California and my hairdresser recommended that I went to go see her. So I went and I told her I'd gotten in Sephora and she gave me some tips. And she's always been really, really sweet and has gone out of her way to come over and hug me and give me advice. Mm. And she's been really nice. So, yeah, but yes, the founders and the Too Faced guys send me stuff. And it's nice when there are other founders who are supportive and kind of show you the ropes. And they've been there ahead of you. And so.
Yeah. And we didn't talk about your favorites from your line. I know it started out really streamlined, but now there's more SKUs. What do you personally use?
I wake up and I use a pump of C. Firma, mm-hmm. a pump of D. Bronzy.
So you don't wash your face?
No.
Okay.
And I think that's key. So my whole thing is about the acid mantle, all about acid mantle, protecting it, supporting it, respecting it. And I think that if you strip it or disrupt it, that there's no chance to have, I mean, it's like chaos. Kind
that's
of
when
ensues,
problems start.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it's the source of all problems outside of ingredients. It's just so that's part of the reason we avoid the suspicious six. Mm-hmm. A lot of those ingredients are problematic for the acid mantle. But not cleansing in the morning, not using a toner, not trying to take off what's there, because it's the best stuff we have between us and the, you know, our face in the world is the line of defense. So
I see what you mean.
I don't wash my face in the morning. I use a pump of C. Firma, a pump of D. Bronzy, a little bit of retinol, a passione, a pump
Doesn't that disrupt like your pH balance or acid mantle of your skin, retinol? No.
No.
Okay.
Not
Sorry.
At all.
I truly don't know.
In fact, your acid mantle holds your pH.
Okay.
It's so important. Like it's like a built-in toner.
But the things that mess with it are like soaps and things that lower pH and surfactants
strip it.
And retinol does not count as one of those.
No.
Got it.
No, retinol's no, it doesn't. It's good. But so the retinol, Behydra, DeBronzi, Firma, and Lala.
Which one's Lala?
The purple. Yeah.
Okay. The purple. Isn't that how people talk about your brand?
Yeah.
Like,
they do.
The yellow one.
That was smart.
It's so
that
true.
Was
they
smart.
Talk about the colors. And that wasn't on purpose at all. That was just me being
convenient,
me, wanting something cute on my cabinet. But I pump it all in my hand, mix it up. Everything's a smoothie for me. And I
mix it all together. And
I mix everything together.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then I put my sunscreen on top of that. Mm-hmm. And that's it.
Good to go.
Yeah, and
that's
then at night, I do this same kind of thing. I wash my face.
Do you use the Slay? Because I love the Slay.
I do use the Slay.
Mm.
I love the Slay. I
Can
use
tell
the
people
bars
what the Slay
on my...
Because not everyone knows what the
Slay
is.
Slay is a new oil balm cleanser that took me 2 years to formulate. And I actually read recently that brands say that they formulate.
I read that article, too.
Yes, and I was like,
Wait, say the article.
I think it was Business of Fashion. It was basically like it's a marketing claim these days to be like, it took us 3 years to formulate this.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And
well,
saying
that's
BS.
I'm here to tell you that it can take you 2 weeks and it can take you 2 years. It just depends on if you nail it or not. It's and you know.
But Slay was a hard
then
one.
Then you've got to go through all the testing and all that. Slay was so hard. I mean, I was tweaking Slay to the 11th hour. So, but that did take 2 years to make. And so when we got done, I love the product. So I use that. And then Marula, Protini, TLC, and Behydra.
And you all mash it up again.
And I mix up my hands up, put it on at night, and go to bed.
The smoothie.
One and done.
And I use the eye creams.
I love that.
I use Baby Facial once a week. And that's it.
Baby Facial's really good.
And Lippy,
That's all. Just a couple.
That's all. And that sounds like a lot, but it takes like 5 seconds.
I like
your practicality.
Just mush it up and mash it on.
Yeah.
She's got 4 kids. She's a busy woman, you know?
Yeah.
This was very informative. I love your philosophy and how you're being transparent about why you've done what you've done.
Yeah, it's very...
Thank you.
I feel like your philosophy is very... it's very nuanced, and I love that.
Hopefully people are getting it and they got a good taste of it. So thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks,
Tiffany. Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly.
When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things that you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff with real hands-on authentication experience.
So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back.
Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other.
With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Okay, it's time to raise a wand.
Please keep in that entire intro. She's raising a wand.
I'm like, I feel a little rusty because like you weren't here for a couple of weeks. Last week I did a raising one by myself and I was like, hey guys, if you too want to have baby soft skin.
It had ASMR vibes.
It's when I'm by myself.
It's weird, right?
Yeah, it was weird.
You did great, though. You did such a great job.
Thank you. Thank you. I was also like super nerding out like weird fangirl with Elizabeth Hurley.
And her voice is like ASMR times 1,000.
It's like a pussycat's purr.
And Tiffany has a very soothing voice, too, in a very soothing way about her.
She does.
You're welcome, listeners.
But
and then there's me.
Liz Hurley is next level. That is like she could just sit in her farm and do voiceovers for the rest of her career. Okay, ready?
What are you raising a wand to?
It's called Revlon. I love this name. So Fierce Vinyl Eyeliner.
That was not ASMR. So Fierce.
So Fierce. It's a waterproof, smudge-proof. Has a waterproof, smudge-proof, lacquer-like sheen. I think, don't worry when you hear lacquer-like. Because I thought it was going to be super shiny and I was going to look like, you know, like rave girl at work. No, but it has a little bit of a sheen. So it's not that like cakey pencil. You know how sometimes pencils can look cakey?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't look cakey. I'm wearing it now, but like I'm tired as hell. So don't look. And
so look or don't look?
No, you can look.
Look away. Look at me.
Look.
What movie? What movie is that from?
I don't know.
Oh, Molly knows. She's mouthing it to
me. Oh, wait a second. The Favorite.
Thank you. The Favorite.
She goes, look at me. Don't look at me.
That's the best part of that whole movie.
The best line. Yes.
Okay.
So, all right. It's only $8.99, has this wonderful chocolate brown color, and I'm bearing the lead. It goes on like butter. Like butter.
Which is interesting because then but it doesn't mat down. So that's
exactly.
Like
it's like,
what color do you like to use?
It's like called like deep chocolate.
Ooh.
And you know, I sometimes feel like liners, they fail me. They get faded and weird. But this one's really, really good. And I have to tell you, you don't need to spend a lot of money for a great eyeliner because look at this Revlon one.
I actually think for pencil eyeliners, I would totally agree. Like even a Wet n Wild one is like still pretty good.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay, well then you could spend all your money on my razor wand, which is Van Cleef & Arpels. Do you say Arpels or Arpel?
I think it's just Arpel.
I'm so classy. Van Cleef & Arpels does fragrances. And this new one that came out this spring, Santal Blanc.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, I have this in my office. Every time I spray it, everybody goes wild and everybody has a very different way of describing it. So I just got a new office and I share it with the fashion director. Mm-hmm. And he's like, what's that coconut smell? And I was like, it's not coconut because I would never wear a coconut.
People are weird.
I can sort of see what he's saying because there's a warmth to it. I can only describe it as like the softest cloud. It's like a white puffy fragrance. It gives me like that texture feeling I get from certain scents. And it's just delightful. It has mandarin, violet leaf, and tonka bean. Tonka sounds like it feels like it would be a little bit powdery even if there's violet in there. But the tonka has this creaminess, but it's not gourmand. I don't know how to describe
it. It's very cloud-like. I know
I'm
which fragrance you're
right
talking
now,
about.
And it just sort of wraps you in a lovely hug. You know what else I would say? You know Philosophy, Amazing Grace?
Yeah.
Just up the glamour level, up the like intensity a little bit.
And the lasting power, I'm sure.
And the lasting power because you have this tonka bean, but it has that sort of laundry skin sort of quality to it. Am I doing a good
job? Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Okay, I described it well.
Very nice.
And it costs a shitload. Sorry. But then get your Revlon eyeliner and all is well.
Thanks for listening. Fat Mascara is produced by our friends at Atwell Media. You can check out our website, fatmascara.com, for episode recaps, product recommendations, and discount codes.
And if you want to reach us directly, email us at info@fatmascara.com, or you can follow us on social, @fatmascara, shoot us a DM, and we'd love if you went over to iTunes and threw us a rating. How many stars?
Five.
Five, please.